this is Josh Banner.
Hello, this is Cammie Beecroft Mahan.
And you're listening to The Invitation.
And the more I find, the more present I am to my own inadequacy, the less I have to do as a director. Ironically,
it becomes so much easier.
And it does.
In a delightful way. Oh
right.
My gosh, yeah.
Right. So when I can be inadequate, then I defer and open to the Spirit in a whole different way.
So, greetings to the Invitation Podcast. This is our series we're calling The Forum on Spiritual Direction. This is where I sit down with my dear friend and collaborator. She is also the co-director for the Invitation School of Contemplative Listening, Cammie Beecroft Mahan. So in this journey, we are exploring together my statement, my thesis, that spiritual direction can solve almost all of the world's problems. This is an enormous statement, and I come at this statement with all of the gravitas of what I believe it means for our world today, especially in the church. And then I'm also boldly attempting to say that the vocabulary of spiritual direction, as we understand it, at the vital intersection of contemplation and justice, that this is paradigmatic of what it means to be a human being, and then what it means to be in relationship with others. And I'm not attempting to say that everyone needs to become a certified spiritual director or that everyone needs to attend to this discipline in the classic formal practice of direction. I am saying that discipleship and formation in the church as we know it is in a place of crisis. And I'll say that that crisis, that spiritual sickness, is chiefly the symptom of our inability to listen to each other deeply, to listen to God within ourselves, and then to discover God in each other. And if you are drawn into this conversation, there's lots of discovery of what this means. And chiefly in this part of the forum, Cammie and I are exploring what this means for our experience of our weakness, or as Cammie begins the conversation, in our ability to go to confession. And she describes for us what the Ministry of Reconciliation, that's the Vatican II vocabulary of the practice of confession within the Roman Catholic tradition. So she describes for us a firsthand experience of what it means to go to the priest in confession. And I believe this is very timely, especially at the beginning of our Lenten journey. From the context of what Cammie is sharing with us about confession, we move into a conversation about vulnerability, the purpose of leaning into our weaknesses. We discuss Brené Brown's leadership and teaching on the gift of vulnerability. I mention how popular culture, especially podcasting, are beating the church toward the public excavation of weakness, we then go on to this question of what failure lab means. We discuss our two respective postures towards how I approach weakness in conversation as opposed to her way of doing this, wanting to respect our unique ways of going at this. We return to the vocabulary of composting our failure. Then we move into this arena of a trauma-informed practice of spiritual direction. What is trauma? What can we grow in? How it is we can grow in our familiarity with trauma-informed practices. I spend some time then unpacking what I believe to be the invitation to not avoid, as the Apostle Paul would say, to not neglect the gathering together. And I offer the idea that perhaps the most faithful way for us to practice our togetherness as followers of Christ, it's going to look in practice something much more like a 12-step recovery group. And that's where we end this, wondering what this looks like. What does deep contemplative listening that gets at healing trauma, what's that look like in the light of day, in the context of the local church? So once again, this conversation extended well past the hour mark, and so I have cut this conversation in half, and so that means I'm going to be offering it in two parts. I will say that I think for my own listening, the real generative energy begins to open for us at the end of this first part, within the 40-minute mark, and then extends into what we are exploring in part two. So, namely, the greatest gift of what we're exploring here is the relief of embracing our own weakness, our own emptiness. So once again, this episode has very little editing. I left in here the longer breaks so that you can experience the kind of time it takes to listen well to each other. I hope and I pray that as you join into this, you will be led deeper into your own weakness and further into the path and the journey, not just into the wilderness, through the wilderness, but that you might become a wounded healer. Amen. So, I'm trying to set our levels here. Check, 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 check. Check, check, test, 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 test. What did I have for breakfast? I had an apple. And I ate it as I walked in here.
That was breakfast.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit?
And 11:10.
Tell me what you had for breakfast.
11:10. I had an everything bagel.
Okay.
At home with a little peanut butter on it.
Wow.
It was just delightful.
Wow, that's exciting.
FYI, Aldi's has the best everything bagels.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Check, check, check. How's your level? Are you too loud or not loud enough?
I feel pretty comfortable with
good.
This. Yeah.
Okay.
I feel
good. All right. So if you have anything that is redundant, like your voice, your version of it, and I think also the delight that I'd gotten some notes from you about, what you might want to do, and I kind of paid attention, but but mostly I was just thinking, honestly, whatever Cammie wants to bring, I'm game for her. And so that you would discern anything that might be similar, I think, is a movement of the Spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you have a way that you'd like to begin?
in an odd way.
Yeah.
Given the topic, it would be the childhood refrain, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned."
Mm.
It has been "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been a while since my last confession."
Mm. Mm. Thank you. And so if you do return to confession, you know, rehearsal for those within your communion and those who maybe have never been, what would that look like? What happens when you go to confession?
It's to say that, to answer your question, so as in within my tradition of origin, it really has, you know, when I was very young, we learned it was the sacrament of penance. And words matter. And so with that, then the nuance of what you had to do to make it right was what the focus became. So just by way of explanation for people that might not be familiar with the sacrament, through the Catholic tradition, you enter in, you ask, "Well, bless me, Father, for I have sinned." You make that statement, an act of contrition. And then you list the, you know, being a young child, we were given the examination of conscience, and it, based on the Ten Commandments, you know, how many times have you lied? How many times have you taken the God's name in vain? You know, how many times have you stolen? You know, the, and that was your laundry list, so to speak. And so then you took it in and you, you know, I didn't listen to my parents three times this week. And I, you know, I got mad at my brother six times this week. And then there's absolution. The priest is absolving. Christ is the one that forgives, but the priest offers this absolution. The church recognizes the restoration. And then the priest will give you your penance, and your penance can be, most priests will give you Hail Marys, Our Fathers, Memoraries, your traditional prayers, devotional prayers. And so that was kind of the way of the sacrament of my youth. As I aged and the church reoriented itself, especially post-Vatican II, living more into this understanding, it took on the more the sacrament of reconciliation, focusing then on what was being restored, reconciling ourselves to God. And then there's the sacrament of confession, which then is focusing on what it is that I'm doing. What is it that I'm confessing? But the sacrament itself is really primarily a movement of restoration. Sin is communal. It's individual, right? It's a separation. Sin, through sin, we separate ourselves from God, from ourselves, and from others. So there's this separation that has taken place. And the sacrament of reconciliation is the restoration of that. And so so when you ask the question, what would it be like, right? It's, I tend to appreciate all three of those nuances. I orient towards a reconciliation. I'm out of sorts, or I've separated myself, or something has come in and impacted, and I've chosen a certain way of attending to it that really needs this. And in the Catholic Church, it's a sacrament of healing. The sacrament itself is a moment of healing. My soul needs restored. I need to be restored to the community. And so based on that, I can honestly say the best penance I've ever received was taking a hard-heartedness I had taken to reconciliation, the sacrament, to confess. There was a coworker, I just, like, it was like nails on a chalkboard. Incredibly grinding. I couldn't find my way to finding any semblance of generosity or compassion mm-hmm. with this coworker. It was just every day was drudgery. And so I went in and I confessed that in the sacrament of confession, because in that regard, I knew I wasn't finding the way mm-hmm. towards this. And so that's for me a sure sign. I need to take this, you know, kind of like Jesus says, to take it to someone. Yeah. When you have an issue, take it to someone. The process for restoration, reconciliation. And so I had taken that and I, you know, pretty convinced that it was more her fault than mine. Right? Like, you know, she just.
Well, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But just knowing that I just couldn't attend to it. I couldn't find myself. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find a way to be in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And so, Father Larry, he was fantastic. Listened to me, asked me a couple clarifying questions.
Yeah.
And then, you know, absolution. I absolve you of your sins. And here's what you're going to do to make it right. So the yeah. penance that he gave me was every day for one work week, I had to say something nice to this coworker. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I just kind of looked at him like, can't you give me a few Our Fathers and Hail Marys? Right? Like, wait, what is this? This, oh, ouch. And so for me, that is the best moment I've ever had mm-hmm. in that sacrament mm-hmm. because he was recognizing
yeah.
that while God can forgive me and I can receive God's forgiveness,
yeah.
there is a practical application. This is what restoration looks like.
Yeah.
This is what the work of healing looks like. Mm. And it can't be devoid of this woman, especially in light of my violation mm-hmm. of her and my animosity of heart. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any verbal exchange.
Yeah.
Right. But it was like, you know, shooting a tiny little dagger, a thousand little
yeah.
daggers
yeah.
with the animosity that I had towards her in my heart. And so, I think just profound wisdom, mm-hmm. When he said, yep, and here's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You know, you've made it right with God. You through this, you know, this moment, you're making it right with yourself, you know, and making mm-hmm. it right with God, but you still need to make it right with her.
Yeah.
And so that was by far the most excruciating practice. Mm-hmm. So every day, and you know, in the first day, the best thing I could say was, I love your shoes.
Oh, wow.
Right. That was it. Like I couldn't
far, just breaking
just,
the ice.
Just, yep. I just, you know, there's gotta be something, right? And it was by the fifth day, then I was really recognizing the gifts this woman brought, uh-huh. you know, with her, what appeared to be always needing to be right.
Yeah.
Well, as the bookkeeper, accountant, and multiple other administrative tasks,
yeah.
it's because of her attention to detail.
Yeah.
And this level of necessity.
Yeah.
Right. So mm-hmm. the whole relationship took on a whole new shimmer and shine.
Wow.
And so it really was by the end of the week being able to say to her, you know, I really appreciate the way you do this. Mm-hmm. And because you do this, I can do that.
Yeah.
You know, the relationship between the jobs, mm-hmm. the relationship between us. And so, so really began to see the giftedness mm-hmm. in all of the things that before that moment of the sacrament were just like,
yeah,
just continuing to harden the heart. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I think about being a part of that sacrament, being present in that sacrament, I now long mm-hmm. for the wisdom of what we would call the confessor, the
yes.
priest,
yes.
to meet me in that depth of mm-hmm. remorse and in that depth of longing.
Yes.
I can, unfortunately, that's not usually the case. Mm. More confessors than not meet more at a level of prescriptive.
Yeah.
You know, what would be, And not that prayers aren't powerful. I don't want to discount the Hail Mary and the Our mm-hmm. Fathers. I don't want to discount the time of prayer. But there is something about, for the handful of confessors, priests who have forced me, and forcing is a strong word, right? But have highly, suggested. And when you're given a penance, you're meant to carry it out.
Yeah.
Those who have in their profound wisdom, and understanding of what reconciliation looks like, those who have done that have always drawn me back to other.
Yeah.
So whether it was confessing any relational mm-hmm. problem, they were always taking me back to mm-hmm. where that relationship is. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, encouraging, challenging, fostering me to see what grace looks like in that relationship mm-hmm. and then to surrender into that grace.
Beautiful.
And so I think when we think about, or when I think about confessional moments, mm-hmm. that it's not, that there's so much more than, so there's the verbal confessing. Mm-hmm. And then there's looking for the restoration. And then there's looking for the amends. Mm-hmm. Right? This is this continual movement mm-hmm. of confessional. And so I find it to be an incredibly powerful sacrament mm-hmm. practice mm-hmm. That in its dignity and in its power, I would say has to meet the communion, the reunion, the restoration to be fully expressed in its honor and dignity meets the depth of remorse and longing to make this look different, to be different.
Yeah.
And that's when it really has that power. Mm. And so because of that experience that I had in that sacrament, that's to the level of the way I attend to it outside the sacrament. Mm. I was thinking, you know, as we've talked about this topic on and off, you and I think about, you know, in my tradition, which is interesting in that we attend to sin as if it's communal, but the confession is individual, mm-hmm. right? The same priest who gave me the beautiful penance always made it clear that while there are these moments that are personal, there's not private, right? So that confession was not private mm-hmm. in the way that the restoration took place. Mm-hmm. Personal, unique to me, right? Confessional is personal, mm-hmm. but it's not this private moment. And so I think at times in Catholic community, we can attend to our sin as if it's hidden away. And then we drop it in this box, the confessional box, right? Mm-hmm. We don't do the box as often anymore, right? It's now that has shifted a little, face to face where it used to be the screen and,
So there's, for those that have only an imagination of this through film and TV, so there's no screens anymore.
There's still the option to do screen if you choose to. Mm-hmm. But no, mm-hmm. you know, because again, it's this restoration moment. And so, mm-hmm. a lot of places now will do, will give you the option. Do you want to do face to face or do you want the screen or the curtain? And again, there's something very public about being looked in the eye as you're naming, recognizing your own sinfulness. And so to be gazed upon and to be met eye to eye in that is more of an embodied experience of what's happening.
Yeah.
The sacramental grace that's happening. And so, so as we have talked about it, you bring forward that what has been that a holy tension for me, right? As I think about, oh, this process feels private, mm-hmm. and that I would say is the fruit of the way we've attended as Catholics, we can attend to it sacramentally. But because of that experience in the sacrament, I can attend to it differently. I can attend to that level of confession, reconciliation, and penance outside that confessional to the same level of remorse, meeting, reunion, communion. And to also state that by tradition, the Catholic Church would hold that confession, the sacrament, is necessary for mortal sin. So that's what we would call grave sin. Like, that's the kind of sin that's just going to keep you completely separated from God. In that state of mortal sin. So the venial sins, and there are very few mortal sins. But the venial sins, what we would call venial sins, they're not necessary for the sacrament. But they're encouraged in that it's the practice of being able to say, I'm sorry. And to feel your sense of being forgiven. And then to move forward and make amends. And so, so I can feel that tension sometimes as you and I talk about the confessional movement. You know, when you're, your intuitive and your deep sense of knowing that it's important to be a regular practice for you. And at times I'm like, oh, that feels too public, right? Or that feels too, right? Like, but I know that's because that's the way I've been acclimated to the confessional. And so I've just so deeply appreciated our conversations over the last few years about that, the role of the confessional moment and movement in basic living.
Well, thank you for naming that. The permissions here, you know, to move into that confessional posture, ironically, are coming, you know, Brené Brown as the vulnerability expert. And that our vulnerability is actually a strength. And then it's other podcasts that I listen to. And I, there's, I don't want to promote particular ones. If you're curious what I'm talking about, feel free to write me, josh@theinvitationcenter.org. Because it doesn't matter which podcast it is, we'll each be drawn to different ones. And I think this is the interesting thing about the way human beings deeply want to be involved with each other, and that we'll use whatever means and technology and art and craft to find ways to be together in ever new ways. And so the crazy thing about podcasting is it's just, it's a wild west. There's really highly produced documentary, professional, kind of journalistic pieces, all the way to one on name that I can't actually listen to a lot. It's called something Anonymous, where this actor, he's not like an AA list actor, but a working actor. And he kind of pivots off his celebrity status, and he's just, this is part of his personality. And people just call him in anonymously to just talk for an hour and a half or two about whatever it is. I can't handle that one. It's too much for me. But within that, I just keep hearing people outside of the church are beating us to confession. They're leading. They want to be exposed. They want to be seen and loved despite their darkest sins. And so if I riff here and go back to back when I did a little bit of writing reviews for music, TV shows and movies for this little Christian theology culture magazine, they had assigned me to write a review for, well, they actually let me pick. And I had just become fascinated with Dexter. Which was on Showtime. I think they did a reboot of it recently, and I haven't watched it. But the conceit of that was a mass murderer who recognized early on as a boy, as a teenager, this need to kill and to do violence. And his father was a cop and knew this, so they focused his rage on killing other murderers. And so he ends up becoming a blood spatter expert as a cop. And so my point of watching Dexter, if there would be a faith perspective of this, is that Dexter's a morality tale. And if we can hope that Dexter is redeemable, and that as he's got these urges, he calls his dark passenger, if he's contending with that, and then finding the love of his life, getting married, settling down, having a kid, and we can just keep wrestling inside, maybe Dexter's not going to do this anymore. Maybe he's redeemable. And as we hope for that, what we're really hoping for is our own redemption. We see ourselves I ended up having conversations in the prison in many ways, understanding that I'm in this prison in many ways for the same reasons as why I watched Dexter. You know, if God will show up here in this dark, dark place amongst these people, then maybe God will show up in my own darkness. And then, you know, recognizing that one point and then having a conversation with some of my brothers in there. So that's where it's kind of broken open. And then even as I've had that preset, the last thing I'll say is coming to terms with, if I'm going to do this online presence and try to recruit people into formation programs, and if I'm going to dare to say, this is a transformative space, you know, the church in modern culture is trying to find ways to get the grandkids to come back to church or the wayward soul to trust. And I've been a part of, as I was reflecting in the essay forum podcast of, I think I was at St. Gregory's reflecting, you know, it's like I've done all this electric guitar music and pop music. It's, you know, contextualizing the gospel into sounds. And I believe in that to certain extents, but we've tried better theology. We've tried better preaching. We've tried better coffee. We've tried better arts productions in the Protestant church, the seeker sensitive models and the mega church things. We've tried rock and roll worship. We've tried contextualizing. We've tried so many things, but fundamentally all those things are shoved in a place that chokes the actual possibility of transformation, when the question is, have we tried God? Mm-hmm. And the only way to really go after that is to be as honest about my need. Have we tried our failure? Have we tried our weakness? And I think that's what Jesus is modeling for us constantly, is I'm going to go hang out with these broken people, and we're going to look at children. We're going to let the sick show up, all the people with all these enormous needs. And I'm going to focus my lens on them. And this is where I arrive. I show up in weakness. Mm-hmm. And so I feel called now at a new level. And I think it's healing me. And it's also freeing me to be even more bold with the online stuff, with this podcast and others. Say, okay, if I'm going to show up in this space, then I am not just somebody who commits failures every day, but I am in many ways a failure. I'm a walking failure. So it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I love it. Yeah. In the sense of, I hope that there's possibility, not that I want to threaten and scare people. So I think that you might be called to a kind of modesty and a posture. And I wonder, as we've touched on here, and I want listeners to know that you're welcome to share as much or as little here. I'm not trying to twist your arm and getting right. vulnerable to right. and going there. Yeah. And we can edit whatever out yeah. that you don't want. And we have edited things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just understanding your history of trauma.
Yeah.
You know, that it maybe is more appropriate for you to be more careful.
You know, I appreciate the word careful, but my sense of it is it's a little bit more nuanced than that.
Okay.
So for me personally, And I think when you talk about a failure lab, that is a really great description of the gospel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a crucifix is like the ultimate symbol of a failure lab.
Mm-hmm.
In some, I don't want to mean Jesus is a failure. I'm not implying all, right?
But he's acquainted with our failures and our grief and our sorrow.
And all of it, mm-hmm. right? And so I think it's relating to the different movements of the Paschal Mystery
mm-hmm.
for me, myself.
Mm-hmm.
And by Paschal Mystery, I mean the sufferings, the dying, and the rising mm-hmm. of Christ. And at any given time, I'm anywhere in that continuum.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I garner is for that to be the movement of Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
I would be crazy to think I don't participate in it.
Mm-hmm.
As if it's not going to be the movements for my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see where my life participates in that moment, in that process, in that mystery, the Paschal Mystery, in the mysteries of the sufferings, and the mystery of the dyings, and the mystery of the risings. And you can look at that in the mysteries of the failures, in the mysteries of the embarrassments, in the mysteries of the vulnerabilities, in the mysteries of the hurts, in the mysteries of the disillusioned disappointment. Right, I can see that those are the movements of the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as you say, trauma. Right, I can choose to stay there. I can just choose to stay the proverbial mystery of the suffering.
Yeah.
But at some point, there's the mystery of the dying.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and those would be what I would consider those confessional
mm-hmm.
moments.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and every time I'm going to die to ego, I'm going to die to vainglory, I'm going to die to pride, I'm going to die to
mm-hmm.
the sense of this false sense of my image.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to die to that.
Yeah.
Right. And some of that I die to willingly, and some of it gets pulled right out of me, right? Like I'm white knuckling
mm-hmm.
as I'm dying to all of that. And it's not for the sake of the suffering and the dying. Those are incredibly valuable movements.
Mm.
But it's so that when I give over, right, and that would be the movement of the tomb,
mm.
when that, what I've suffered, what I've died to self, can sit in this place that is dark and dank, still and mm. quiet, a place of I don't know what happened in there, right? I know if I look at the Paschal Mystery, I know something broken,
mm.
bloodied and bruised, someone broken, bloodied and bruised went into this tomb,
mm.
and that was not the experience on the other side,
mm-hmm.
right? So when I'm in my death, mm. my failure, right, my whatever it is, like I just get present to my own weakness, my own arrogance, my own
yeah.
unmindfulness, right? My own propensities for self-preservation
yeah.
versus self-expression.
Yeah.
Then I'm in my tomb where I'm just, at that point, I can't do much to affect the change.
Yeah.
But I can offer all this brokenness.
Yeah.
And I can trust.
Mm-hmm.
And faithful abiding, that grace, love, mercy, compassion, transformation, as you'd said earlier, are going to come in here and do something with us.
Yeah.
And mine is to hold steady. Mine is to make an offering of myself.
Yeah.
To hold steady while that's happening.
Yeah.
To participate it when I get a sense of it.
Right.
To collaborate with it when I can smell it.
Mm-hmm.
But most of it's happening
mm-hmm.
kind of beyond my field of vision, because I don't know that in my human imagination, no matter how wild my dreams are,
yeah.
I would have ever created the right. resurrection
right.
from the crucifixion.
Right.
Right. So I clearly understand
right.
that is the purview of God's field of vision,
mm-hmm.
what kingdom coming looks like.
Right.
And so then then I hold that space. And that would be, you know, my movements of acknowledging, confessing, mm-hmm. offering over, but then waiting. Mm-hmm. Because then the resurrection comes.
Yeah.
Right. And you were sharing in your last, you know, in the video or the podcast you were just posting, this idea of composting.
Yeah.
Well, that's it, right? Yeah. That's being transformed
yeah.
into what will be new life, new living. Mm. It's food for what is next.
Yeah.
And so then I look to the resurrection and I see, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
What I appreciate about the movement of the resurrection, there's so many things, but one thing is this idea that in that form, all of my wounds are still going to be with me.
Yeah.
Right? They were with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like I get to get rid of them, right? Like I'm never going to mm-hmm. see them ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. They're still with me.
Mm-hmm.
But they're in this glorified, resurrected,
yeah.
transfigured
mm-hmm.
form.
They become our trophies.
They become, yeah, they become these mm-hmm. these moments of just how powerful and glorious mm-hmm. this work of mercy and love mm-hmm. is. And then the other, as I look again to the resurrection, so much so that even Jesus' closest partners didn't recognize him.
Yeah.
You know, Mary Magdalene right there, she's confronting.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, she's accusing this gardener of taking him. That's how much he's just this transformed beyond the recognition of those who know us.
Mm-hmm.
Until he, you know, says her name and then she,
mm-hmm.
she comes to understand on Emmaus. Like there's so many stories of, but then the wounds become places of identity, right?
Yeah.
Thomas gets to put his hands in the side. So, mm-hmm. so there's this purpose of the glorification of these wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that we have our well-wounded healer.
Mm-hmm.
We have these wounds that others can recognize their brokenness in,
mm-hmm.
right? A wound, like mm-hmm. I think a broken heart that's in its resurrected form pings out to those that are in their suffering or dying form, right? That,
mm-hmm.
So they become these markers for us. So as you, that's all the long way around to saying modesty. And I don't know that it's modesty as much as it's some of it's in this new form.
Yeah.
And some of it's being broken open, right? It's
right.
the simultaneity
right.
of all of that. And so when the moments of failure come, I can readily accept those moments
yeah.
of failure. I don't know that's and just like healing through trauma,
mm-hmm.
right? There's the post-traumatic growth.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about post-traumatic syndrome, like mm-hmm. PTSD. 60% of, if I'm not mistaken, 60% of all people who will encounter trauma heal through post-traumatic growth,
mm-hmm.
right? There's, I think, 8 to 12% that traumas might be a lifelong process,
mm-hmm.
and then others that will do healing, whatever the difference is, through the really the deep trauma.
Yeah.
Wrestling with that. But most trauma work, most of our trauma healing, most of our trauma being is through this post-traumatic growth.
Mm-hmm. So define that.
So post-traumatic growth is that we, you know, the principle you go through it,
yeah.
you know, it makes you stronger. Right?
Yeah.
If it doesn't kill you, it makes you strong. That there's constantly these moments of growth that are happening in the healing.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're doing your trauma healing, you're doing it from these places of growing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Not reliving. You're not like, how is it? Peter Levine says, when you're doing the trauma work, you're revisiting, not reliving.
Mm-hmm.
Re-traumatizing means you're reliving.
Yeah.
But most of the work is revisiting.
Yeah.
And pulling out the nuggets of the wisdom. Right. So you're mm-hmm. releasing the energy. There's all kinds of methodologies to it. But the idea is that every moment is a moment of growing
mm-hmm.
through it to the point where when healing feels complete,
yeah.
you have saved all the nuggets from that experience, mm-hmm. because that experience has made you more attuned mm-hmm. to others who are suffering,
yeah.
or that has raised a level of intuition that you can sense who's living out of an ego self and who's really a generous soul, right?
Yeah.
You just have all of these new gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the,
oh, so good.
The traumatic, thank post-traumatic you. Growth, mm-hmm. right? Is that you're living the gifts, right? And so again, yeah. it would be that movement of resurrection. You're seeing the glorification of some of these wounds.
Yeah.
Versus still hanging
yeah.
on that cross.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and I don't mean to talk of it lightly or as if it's magic.
No.
It's work
for yeah.
people, but that's what I mean by the simultaneity.
Yeah.
You can be in that place of simultaneity.
Yeah. And that's what I'd hope that a failure lab could be, as a place to do that post-traumatic work. And so, what's come out of me in the last few weeks is, when the apostle says, you know, do not neglect the gathering together. You know, this is this instinct. We should go to church. I don't think that his conception of that gathering together was limited to whatever, an hour or to a Sunday morning service where you had some songs and then some teaching and some announcements done. And those can be wonderful. I'm coming back in my healing to loving what is possible in that 2023 version through my local church. I think what the apostle was mapping out was do not stop doing what I'm teaching you to do here throughout these epistles, which means what's the core of the epistles? It's to understand your baptism, your truest identity, but to do that in practical ways and how you relate to each other. And when you do that, you're going to run into all of the darkness that's inside of you. So he talks very clearly about all the sin and all the things that are broken. And so then he says, you know, let's be like Christ in Philippians 2 and empty ourselves. Let's empty of ourselves. If he was in the very nature God, but he did not consider quality with God something to be exploited. And so he took on the weakness of being in a fellowship of suffering with us to be conformed into death. So then that we can go to the Philippians 3 of we know him, the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of suffering, that we are conformed unto death. So working this out in fear and trembling, bearing one another's burdens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think this is the context of, you know, it was a small group movement in the Protestant church in the last couple decades that wanted to try to have an alternative to this. But the only real model in our present culture that I have for it is the 12-step recovery groups.
Yeah.
And those are horrifying. And mostly at the local church level, I'm coming to find out that if a church has any kind of resources for people in addiction recovery, it's this tokenage side group where you kind of meet over here. You know, maybe there's AA in the basement, and then maybe we have a Christian, like an evangelical version of it where we're championing that. But I keep hearing this kind of condescension of like, oh, we've got some people that have addiction that are part of our community. They're coming with their weakness. What I think Paul would say in the model of Christ is, no, well, this is all of us.
Right.
This is front and center. And so the hope is that we learn how to normalize. And I want to say to anyone listening, we do this covenant of presence that I've adopted this vocabulary from. I do this summer camp, worship arts summer camp for high school students, you know, and they come wanting to be together, but trying to learn how for this week. So, it's the covenant of presence. It's a set of agreements that we all give each other space. And one is no share or die. There's no pressure for you to share too much or too little. So when I talk about this fellowship of suffering, I'm glad that you brought up like our respective postures towards this, because I don't expect everyone to come in the way that I do or the way that Cammy does. The question is, what's helpful for you in your next step? So, I'm also trying to like say this in what I'm imagining for the local church, in terms of Failure Lab, and also just for spiritual direction. You know, if you're interested in practicing as a director, we're not hoping that people come in to tell us all of the darkest things in the first few sessions, if ever.
Right.
And then, as a directee, you don't have to come in. So as a director, I don't expect that. And then when I find a director to go to, the question is just, is any openness, and as you're saying, to cooperate in the post-traumatic situation, I've got so much here. So I love getting to document this with you. So bear with me. But the science, to catch listeners up, and maybe you're already dialed into this, is that re-traumatization, and maybe you'll continue this, it means that when they've taken people that have had a car accident or something heavy, and they put them in an MRI and they study the brain and they're asking them to recall that situation, the MRI is showing up with the same kinds of, it's hitting the same lights.
Right.
After, and this could be years
right.
after the accident,
right.
as what we would see happen in the immediate event.
Right.
So post-trauma is meaning that the trauma, the event is still continuing, and it's in the muscular neural pathways.
Right.
So again, to kind of bring it together, we're not saying that we just want a pity party. We're not saying that we want to just re-trigger people.
No.
But the question, don't. Of course, but how, so this is the posture. How do we create avenues in direction or in local church practices that people can begin to imagine a safe way to not just be re-triggered, but to begin what you're describing earlier, this work of allowing the energy of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go on with a thing I'm personally thinking about, but I want to let you respond to any of that.
So a couple things come to mind as you're saying that. I do still fall on the side that to do that work, it's going to be important to do it with someone who is
yes.
trained.
Yes. Especially if it's very severe.
Yes.
I want to say that all of us need this at some level in, right. in social. I don't want people to have to go back to a spiritual director or a therapist, but most of us have, you know, clinically identifiable pathologies and wounds. So, go ahead.
Yes. And, mm-hmm. and I would say it would be fairly comfortable to say, all of us are conditioned,
mm-hmm.
right? We have some level of conditioning
mm-hmm.
that loops us into behavior
mm-hmm.
that may not be trauma seated,
mm-hmm.
but we still have this reframing of a story that needs to take place.
Mm-hmm.
Some it's rooted in trauma,
mm-hmm.
and then that's a whole different level of attending too. And so that's where it has, I said, that's the kind of work training has to be. Somebody has to be trained
mm-hmm.
to partner with somebody on that.
So I hope this conversation, if you got this far into this episode, I hope that you'll dive into the next part two that I hope to release soon, and I will begin that by reviewing what Cammie has just shared with us about the importance of having some trained practitioners, how to handle the enormity of trauma with some real care. And from here we move on to the questions of what justice means in the sense of creating safe spaces for people. If this conversation is especially stirring you, I would love to hear from you. I'd love some feedback. I don't expect this conversation to reach tons and tons of people. I'm aiming more specifically at gathering those who are especially called to these kinds of practices, into this vocabulary. So please don't be shy. Send me some feedback. What is helping you? What is confusing you? what would you hope us to continue discussing? Are there some things that we need to revisit with more attention to detail? And if you are at a point of availability, we will be hosting a in-person retreat March 16th through the 18th at St. Gregory's Abbey is the location now here. That's in Three Rivers, Michigan, which is an hour and a half or so from Holland, where I'm located. It's going to be a small group, but we do have a couple spots left. And if any of these resources that we're offering through the podcast are helpful to you, if you feel called and stirred to consider your own practice of spiritual direction, or if you're interested in one of our other formation journeys, we have the School of Prayer, which is a 9-month study in practice of the rule of life at the vital intersection of contemplation and justice. And then soon we'll also be launching what I'm just going to call the Failure Lab, which is a 3-month experience where we consider the first of the 12 steps. This is that we have come to accept our powerlessness over our respective drugs of choice, whether that's dopamine hits with social media or hard drugs, workaholism, or a matter of worshiping our families and our upward mobility. You can find more information about these formation experiences at the website. That's theinvitationcenter.org. If you're not already a subscriber to our mailing list, I invite you to do that. We do need financial support. So if you're a person who has means and occasion to make a donation, you can find a place to make that donation on the landing page of theinvitationcenter.org. You'll see at the top right of the heading a button that says partner with us. But most of all, we value your friendship, your continued participation in listening to these conversations, and also your referrals. If you can send the podcast on to those others you know, who might also benefit of being a part of this conversation. We appreciate how you can help us share the love. Once again, as always, I will say it is an honor and a gift to have you join in to these conversations. I hope and pray that you are experiencing more of the healing mercy in the midst of your own wilderness, wherever that may be. Till next time. Amen.